This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng. Maybe it's just me. While I don't always judge a book by its cover, I do make an evaluation of it based on the title and the artwork on the dust jacket. Titles which merely carry the name of the protagonist, the hero of the tale, or in the case of an art exhibition, something prosaic like orchids or flowers or shophouse watercolors, do not tease thought. I like telling titles. When Victor Chin sent me an email to inform me about his exhibition, he wrote in the subject line, Victor Chin's Visual Voices Against the Darkness. Suddenly, Shophouse Watercolors, the name of his exhibition, took on a different coloration. And I have the man here in the studio. Victor, why the title Shophouse Watercolors, which doesn't seem to say very much except for what it is?
Well, Shophouse Watercolors is my artwork. But my artwork tries to throw light and give voice to a darkness, which is the interior of the shophouse.
But why didn't you put that as part of the title? If I were to look at the shophouse watercolors, it just says what the thing is. It's just like saying flowers. It doesn't tell me something beyond the flowers that the artist is looking at or the artist is trying to explore.
So let's look at some pictures.
You didn't come up with the title of the exhibition.
The title of the exhibition at this gallery is, say, Shophouse Watercolors, which is straightforward because this is an art gallery and they are interested in showing watercolors. And my shophouses are in some way haven't been shown for 20 years. And this was done that long ago. And many young people or many old people like me wouldn't have seen these watercolors before. And this was a way of saying to the artists, these are watercolors of shop houses of a particular type. But if you go one level higher or deeper, then you can say, oh, this artist is throwing light in darkness of the interior of the shop houses or the problems that are now faced by most of these shop house residents who are in this neighborhood, who are perhaps in imminent danger of being evicted. These are forced eviction to a lot of these shop houses in our towns and cities. My exhibition is about four towns, the early straight settlements towns like Penang, Malacca, and Singapore, plus KL, where I live. Now, this kind of vernacular traditional shop houses that we all have grown up with are now in imminent danger. 20 years ago, it was also in imminent danger of demolition. Today, it's even more urgent.
Before we jump into looking at the works themselves, I know as somebody who reads and as somebody who looks at names and seeing significance in them, calling for me, I'm still stuck on this shophouse watercolors. Why didn't you call it, as you did in your email, Against the Darkness? Or as in a film that you were a participant of, you say, Memory as Resistance. Because shophouse will only give me the image of shophouse. I don't know what the artist is getting at.
You see, Sun Heng, you come from a very dramatic background. And I really enjoy people who really appreciate words, dramatic words put together. And in general terms, watercolors, shophouse appeals to quite a large perspective of people as well, straight away. But Light Against Darkness is a very poetic, dramatic, literary term. And only people like you, Sunil, really appreciate it. I'm deeply moved. I'm very happy that there is the other level of looking at art or literature or drama or theater like you do, that words like that really has a much deeper echo in our conversation. Okay, but if you look and think deeper, we can go and see what really is about throwing light in darkness. Yeah.
As the artist, do you want to guide your viewer into seeing what you see, or do you just say, see, and then leave the interpretation to them? When you just say shophouse watercolors, in a sense, you're just leaving the viewer to interpret what these things are. But when you tell me, against the darkness, something is triggered in my head.
I always like to use an analogy. I don't know where it's come from. There's this elephant, and there's this six blind person.
And then, I know where this story is going.
Yeah, and each of this blind person is holding a different part of an elephant. And each of them swear the elephant is just this tiny tail. Like a rope. Like a rope. The other one say, oh, it's got this huge kind of tusk shape, very sharp at the end. So six of them swear that they know what an elephant looks like. So in looking at art or looking at life, or looking at philosophy or whatever, we have to allow a wide spectrum of interpretation. Narrowness is something which should be against as well. Narrowness of mind is actually something which I'm like, if you look at a watercolor, you can look at it just as the surface, but if you can look deeper, you can look at other aspects. So in terms of how people interpret, we should be very open. And then inclusive as well, really, yeah.
But what happens to an artist who is also an activist?
Well, you see, all of us, if you're worth any salt at all, and you have 2 cents worth of, say, consciousness or empathy, or where you look at your neighbors and you look at your street, you look at your community and how they are suffering. And if their suffering don't reach you at a certain level, or you're not aware of it, you walk past this home or this street and you're not aware of this stress that this family is facing because they can't pay the rent and they're being forced to evict from this house. Now, if you pass all those every day in your life, in all the towns, this happens all the time. 20 years ago, it was the same. Today, it's even more stressful due to many other complex issues. But if you don't have any sense of empathy or understanding to see the suffering around you, then what kind of a person are you? So for an artist, I'm, of course, using my art as a first entry point to a discussion. As an artist, I look at this building along the street. If you pass it, you'll probably not notice it at all because it's all run down, it's sort of drab. But if you care to look up to the roof line instead of looking at your handphone, if you care,
oh, that's a slap.
If you care to look at the people working there instead of chatting on your handphone, all those things the artist can do is to draw your attention. I can only draw your attention, but the way I draw your attention has to be very dramatic, just like a dramatic line. If I just say, please look, it doesn't say anything. But throw light on darkness. You see, that appeals to it intermediately. So does this painting throw light on darkness? In a way it does, because it turns the picture upside down. It makes you look, wow, I have not seen this structure or this shape before. Now, isn't it interesting? Where has this shape come from? Which colonial influence has this come from? Has it come from the Greek roots, the Roman roots, the British roots, or the Chinese roots, or the Indian roots? Now, our country has benefited from a sort of exploitative history of European...
An amalgamation of histories.
Yes, but very dark side as well. But anyway, we can throw light on it as well. So the suffering and oppression thing some artists can actually help us look at, which is not often clear, is what I think... if you're 2 cents worth of an artist or a person, not just an artist, it could be any person. You should be able to see your neighbors suffering and say, yeah, this old shop house, it's got very interesting and intricate carving and shapes and line. Very unusual, very unique in Penang, and very unique in Malacca, in Singapore, or KL. But the people there are suffering. And who are the people suffering and who are causing this kind of oppression? It's the landlords, it's the speculators, it's the real estate people, it's the city hall's bad, poor management of urban planning and all the other issues which are very complex. As an artist, I can say, throw light into all these dark spots.
Seems to me you're also asking us to empathize. You're asking us to become aware of our own existence. But part of our existence, Victor, is about seeing change. You are calling up all these images of homes which were still around in the 60s, but mostly gone now. Change is inevitable. At least in the business world, that's what they keep teaching. Change is inevitable, and the only constant is change. So if change is inevitable, telling us about these things is nostalgia.
Well, I think there's a false belief in change. I think we have believed it without even questioning what change really is. I think we have false belief in that this has to be forced eviction. There's a false belief that to legitimize a clearing of a neighborhood, to say modernize, what does all that mean? It just means that you force this group of poor people and give it to the have money and have power group. That's all it does. It has no really beneficial. You see, economics is about a common good, if it's the heart of it. How do you plan a system which is for the common good? Politicians, economists, and others, their job is actually to take care of the people. If you don't take care of certain section, only take care of the rich, then that is not economics. There's false reason that, oh, we're going to modify, change this whole street, upgrade it, to modernize it, to gentrify it. Yes, but for whose benefit?
I'm quite sympathetic to the kind of causes you're looking at. Maybe I've also have earned the right to ask this question because I am of your age. We are older. We look back and say older things need to be kept alive and kept on the front burner as opposed to the back burner. Is that what's going on also?
Well, I think a sense of self has to come from the past, the present, and the future. Without the past, which this landscape and streetscape has given us, we will not be who we are today. It still depends on who you are today. But to be a person which has got the past, present, and future aspirations, all this thing matters. There's no such thing as called nostalgia. I'm not like sort of, you know, crying nostalgic about it. I think this is a clear eye looking at human condition. These were done 50, 60 years ago, and these were the migrants that came in and labored and persevered and kept whatever they could. This set of shop houses, 64 shop houses, that is a portrait of four towns and cities, illustrates a brief visual history of Malaysian architecture before independence. These are what I would call vernacular. Of course, vernacular meaning is done in a humble way with local material. The modern architects that come in would shishi this sort of work because, it's old. This is rubbish. We should build our own stuff and bring our own identity into it. So skyscrapers and all those things take the place of these. Sure, that's only one way of thinking of urban planning and urban design issues. There are six or seven different parts of looking at the city. The danger is, or the false belief that there is one dominant narrative that it has to go this way or that way, should be examined and challenged. And I think we should have room for people our age, room for people who are our son's age, room for people who are our grandchildren's age, and of course for the powerful elitists who have control of the banks and who have control of vast amount of speculative money into real estate. The battle, the cultural battle, goes on. So my story, to bring it up to date, 20 years ago, I did this. And 20 years later, I can talk to you as a friend at my age to say, look, this is not changed. Old. We are still having cultural wars. And we're still bullying each other like, huh? Hey, why are you stealing my money?
I'm speaking with Victor Chin, artist, who is holding an exhibition of heritage shop houses in watercolors. We've been talking about art and its role. Coming up, more on the exhibition and how it hopes to be a barrier against the darkness. This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Hing, BFM 89.9. You are tuned to Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng. In the studio with me is the artist Victor Chin, and we've been talking about his Chop House watercolors. And in a way, we've been talking about the role of art and the role of the artist in society. His exhibition, Chop House Watercolors, is being held this weekend at the school in Jai Wan in PJ. If the story is about what's going on, why watercolors? You are an artist, you also take photographs. What do watercolors do that photographs cannot do?
They are two different media. Photography is also very complex. Watercolor is also complex. You look at a subject, and then you use your emotional consciousness to recreate that subject onto a piece of paper. And then whatever design and whatever composition, whatever selection of angle and shape, which makes a dramatic take, so that people looking at this subject of a shop house say, hey, I don't see this shop house the way it is. So a watercolor, an artist can create from nothing through his emotional consciousness of what he's seen into a document, and with color, with texture, with shape and line, and how economically he has expressed that shape. Now, photography, of course, is completely different art and skill and media. Depends on how you look at photography. It's also like the elephant. 10 different people say 10 different things about photography. I often like this classic Bresson sort of description of photography. It's the instant moment. In other words, it's all about luck. It's all about luck of light, your luck of being at the right spot at the right time, and something is happening, and you just happen to click the shutter. And that moment is arrested. Now, photography has that quality about it. But you can go to a studio, and you take 10 days to light up a subject, and then take one picture. That's also possible. 10 days to do one shot, or 10 seconds to do one shot, it's still photography. It just depends how much price you pay, how much, and what subject you like. So photography, like art, like watercolor, I mean, I paint in acrylic, I paint in other media as well. But this set of work done 20 years ago were all done on watercolors. Because I was inspired by artists like Tan Chung Gee from Penang and all the other famous artists at that time who were doing watercolors, you see. And I thought watercolor allows me to also express the vintage of the color of the wall of those old buildings, because over the years they have weathered, it looks green and it looks blue, it looks yellow, and it's all like, wow, it's an abstract piece of work.
What was your process? Did you sit in front of the building and then painted it, or did you look at it, take a photograph, went home, sketch it again on paper, and then started painting?
It's both. Something I use photograph as a way of taking notes. And I also use a sketchbook to make some notes. The way I paint watercolor, I mean, each of my watercolor would have taken me 1 week to finish. From doing the clear outline of a selected facade, giving all the details of the roof line, all the tiles formation, and all the intricate carving or moldings or shapes that the owners got the nameless craftsmen and skilled people to put on the wall as auspicious sign or as sign of wealth or whatever it did. And all those things has to come clearly in my work, because I am paying a homage to other artists who have made these facades as interesting as it is for me now as they did the last time. So in terms of photography, you can also do detail of a facade, but then you have to then depend on the light, you get to depend on lots of other natural things. But for an artist in my studio, I can recreate.
You can put the light where you want it.
You are right. Or put the shadow when I like, or put a figure that I like, or move this table up or move that table down. That's what an artist can actually do with his sort of freer ability to rearrange everything on his piece of paper.
Which,
but a photographer can also do that.
Can
he can rearrange in the studio exactly how he wants all his objects to be flying as well.
Except that when you are taking a photograph of a building, you have less control over the building, I would assume.
The photography now with Photoshop, with all the other thing, you can do anything as well.
As an artist who is ethnically Chinese, are you Peranakan?
No. I am what the Peranakan would look at as you, Singke. Poor, you where come from? I think my parents also came as early Tin Mine Singke at those times, my great-grandfather. But we grew up in a very humble, very makeshift early settlement, which most of the Tin Mine settlements would have disappeared, except for the Tin Mine routes that I have now worked on in Rakan Mantin recently, which is
the Hakka village.
Yeah, the Hakka village. But that aside, I have grown up in a house like that, a shop house. We all live at the room right at the back at this dark corridor, which is really scary because all the other neighbors of yours are always trying to scare you from behind the curtain. So it has to do with that light on the darkness as well, Sun Heng. It's this long corridor that you go into your room, which is far at the back, near the kitchen, near the toilet. Because we were poor, we couldn't live in the front room. And all those things actually matters to me. The heart of this matter is actually, as you mentioned, Chinese or Peranakan or any other race. Our country is sadly going for the last 50 years towards a dominant narrative. This dominant narrative is really a questionable policy. And through art and through design and through discussion, we should challenge this overriding dominant narrative, which is against our constitution, by the way. So we have to challenge in a very obtuse way, direct way or indirect way, this dominant
narrative. And I noticed that your paintings, because they are of shop houses, they are the urban landscape. Is that intentional?
Yes. Sunheng, I am very conscious on the last, I'm 68 years old. I've been consciously aware that to be proud of as a Malaysian, our Chinese narrative is just as important as the other narrative.
Since you have brought in that subject, to what extent is your painting influenced by Chinese ink and brush painting?
You're very naughty.
Why am I naughty?
You see that, of course, in that sense that you very naughty in the sense you really know a lot about art and also know a lot about the history of art. Of course, as an artist, we are all influenced by other artists. As a writer, we are all influenced by other writers. As a filmmaker, we all have our forefathers, our parent in our art. And to deny it is, of course, you know, a false belief in your own deceit. I have, of course, been influenced by Chinese art history, European art history. I went to England for an art school. I've always been influenced by all sorts of artists looking at the way they look. And if you care, like literature or music, or you got to be involved with what other people are doing. You can't be an island on yourself. Of course, the great thing about it is this elephant. Six of us could look at it differently and really enjoy it. And I don't think there should be a dominant narrative of any sort, really. What is needed, perhaps, is a kind of a sensible, caring community that allows quirky look, serious look, intellectual look, academic look, or just ironical look at things. I think that's why mine, of course, is just one take. Of course, the Chinese history, the Chinese way of painting, the Chinese shop house is very important in Malaysian historical and cultural landscape. And because the major narrative of our country is so loud and so dominating, we must all make an effort to challenge it and challenge it in whatever way we can.
In the context of the paintings, though, like you say you have adopted also, or that you are aware of Chinese ways of painting. What is manifested?
Well, it's a perspective. You see, the Chinese have this flying perspective of looking.
Well, I've never heard the expression as flying perspective.
It's like a bird's eye view.
Yeah.
It hasn't got a vanishing perspective like Western art. The Chinese art has a very distinctive way of looking at the world.
Yeah, you look from the top and you keep coming down as you paint down.
And then
you look
from east to west. There's no vanishing point. You keep the vanishing points keep moving.
But in some of your works, there is in a sense of a vanishing point.
Yes, because I cut it very dramatically from the rest of the building. It's a kind of, I make it a three-dimensional object. Hey, how I don't see this building the way it is, but because it's the third floor, and on the third floor, you hardly lift up your neck. You see, you're always looking at your handphone. The thing is, now, how do I, as an artist, capture your attention? I have to make it very dramatic. I have to cut it in a way or look at it at an angle which you will never have seen. Or now you have the drone, now you can fly or whatever it is. But at that time, you could use your own imagination to fly, you see. This was done before drone, before the aerial photograph that you can use. So it was a very imaginative flight, which we all do. Like Shakespeare's imaginative flight in words, you know. This is imaginative flight in visuals.
These 64 works were painted some 20 years ago and over a period of 15 years. So you painted Penang, Kuala Lumpur, Malacca, Singapore. Which city or which town is doing best in preserving these older buildings?
Well, Penang, of course, has the UNESCO heritage label. And then Malacca also followed at the same time with the UNESCO granting it a heritage city status. So they have an obligation to follow UNESCO guidelines about the core, the inner core, all the other sort of administrative issues about how you should conduct your conservation of your town. Singapore does it on their own without UNESCO's guidelines. They do it in their own way. Of course, for me, the best conservation is no conservation at all. Meaning, you should just leave the community to do what they do best. Keep the maintenance.
I'm not sure I follow where you're going with this.
Yeah. Meaning that you should have as little touch in terms of administrative thing where...
You're talking about official administrators coming
you
into
you can't come in and say, well, we're going to gazette this place and or gazette that place. We're going to demolish this place or demolish this place. We're going to keep this place and you guys got to be evicted. I think those drastic administrative issues should be sort of be very carefully done. The most important aspect of conservation is the people, the resident, the kuetiao sellers, the tailors, the cobblers, our great-great-grandfather's sort of, you know, hardware shop or whatever shop, or brothel. The thing is, people is the most important thing you keep. What give character to Penang? What give character to Malacca? Are the people who used to, at one time, say, live casually, celebrate local holidays, they live and work in the same neighborhood. Now, those are the color that people come to see your town. What they've done now is to clear up all those native inhabitants and put in fancy cafe, la, fancy restaurant, la, where at night it's all closed and it's dead. So the town becomes dead. There's nobody living, working and celebrating local holidays anymore. So conservation is conserving the people that live there. It's not the shell. The shell you can demolish, really. It's the people. It's the humanity. Is our great-great-grandfather's labor of persistent resistance to change. I think we should keep that as a character of our neighborhood.
So if I'm looking at your paintings, what you've just said to me should make me focus on the people in your paintings, which you probably, when you first saw them, there were probably not that many people there. You had to place people there to draw attention to the fact that these were at one time inhabited by people doing everyday mundane tasks.
Yeah, at the heart of it is the people, this lady sweeping and this boy looking. It reminds me of many families who learned from their parents what they were doing. Very humble job looking after a building or doing char kway teow or frying this or frying that. At the end is the common good. If you should take care of the people first. Now, six elephants, okay, each one has an idea. But the emphasis is wrong when it's dominated by one, which is the designer up 30 floor up in the map. And you say, okay, conservation area, this street I want. Come on.
Victor Chin's exhibition titled Shop House Watercolors starts today. at the Red Studio in the school Jaya One, and it will run till June 29th. The opening ceremony, however, will take place this Sunday at 2 p.m. and will be followed by a talk by the artist at 4 p.m. This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng, BFM 89.9. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.